For the most part, like at the duty stations I've been in, like, and I don't want you to classify for anyone listening who's maybe still active duty that maybe someone's bad day doesn't make them a bad person, right? If you're having a bad day, doesn't mean you're a bad person, correct? So our leadership, like as much as people might say, oh, he's just talking out of his ass or he's being a kiss ass, that's completely a lie, because the leadership I've had in my communities have done nothing but gone to bat for me and stood up for me. And if I have any question, they'll get me the answer and they'll do anything they can to help us out, because they know that, like, hey, one day this person is gonna be in my position. But if he is in my position, I wanna be able to show him that this is the type of leader he's supposed to be, right? Don't think just because I'm a chief or I'm a senior chief or I'm a master chief, I don't have the time of day for you, because that is completely the opposite of what I've experienced in my entire career.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
All right, all right. We are on our very first video podcast episode ever, honestly, but also of 2024, and we have Vinny with us here today. I was on Vinny's podcast literally like 2 days ago. We recorded, at least, and so I'm so excited to have him here today. Vinny, please tell the people who you are and where you came from and how you got to where you are today.
Easy day, Rachel. Thank you so much. Hey, that intro is dope.
Thank you.
Kind of got me going. It was like I took a hit of pre-workout or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Nah, thank you so much for having me out here. And, you know, it's cool for people to go see, you know, our episode on my platform and now see my episode. You know, it'll be dope. But anyway, so my name is Vinny Harum. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I was raised in Staten Island, New York. I grew up with a split family. My parents split when I was about 3 years old. Me and my mom hopped around Staten Island our entire life from house to house to house. Ultimately, we find our like permanent house where we lived in for a couple of years. And then in, I think it was 2012, I was a victim of it. I have no clue even when the date, when the year was. But Hurricane Sandy came to the New York area and our house was like right down on the beach. And Hurricane Sandy absolutely wiped our house away.
Oh my
so
God.
Me and my mom kind of had to start from square one. So she is my rock. She is my ride or die. She is the person who made me who I am today. But getting back to it. So after the hurricane, right, I was like, well, now what am I going to do? Like, I just graduated high school. I have no idea, like, what I'm going to do. And everyone tells you, go to college, go to college, go to college. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'll just go to college. Hated it. I hated it. I made it through about maybe a year and a half. And then I was just like, there's no way I can do this for the rest of my life. And it felt like the rest of my life, right? Like bad times like that. You know, like there's like an end. But at that point, that just felt like there was no end for me. So I was like, you know what? I am not going to college no more. Told my mom, I was like, mom, I'm dropping out. I'm not about this whole like university life. So she was like, all right, well, what are you going to do? So I was like working as like a waitress, like a bartender type ordeal in restaurants my entire life. So while I was doing that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to nursing school. And my mom was like, sounds good. Go for it. I was like, all right. So I went to the school. It's called the St. Paul's School of Nursing. And I actually went to go be a medical assistant. It was about an 18-month program that was accelerated. So it was a 2-year associate's degree, but it was accelerated into 18 months. Meaning, you know, you don't get summer breaks, you don't get winter vacations, it just goes straight through, you get your degree, and then see you later. I started working after college in, like, a doctor's office, and it was a gynecologist, pediatrics, and a podiatrist. So, feet, kids, and...
Random as hell.
and the last part, yeah. It was in a very bad neighborhood, so just... I don't want to say the patients or the clientele were not what I thought it'd be. I was trying to get jobs in hospitals, but it was very hard for a male in the nursing field to get a job, right? Like, I remember this one story. I walked into a doctor's office with my resume, because that's how we did things. You know, it's weird to say that's how we did things because I'm not that right. old. I'm only 30, but, you know, that's how we did things. So I walked in the doctor's office and I handed him my resume and I was just like, hey, are you hiring? And like, here's my certificate, here's my degree, you know, here's my all my accreditations. And he was like, I'm going to be honest with you, bro. Like, I am hiring, but I'm not going to hire you. And I was like,
what? Really?
And he was like, the stigma of when you walk into a doctor's office is you want to see a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl behind the desk. Wow. Because you want that attractiveness feature. But also, you want people to be comfortable with a female in the room rather than a male. Wow. What I mean by that is when I worked in the gynecologist's office, for example, I would have to ask every female patient, right, obviously, hey, I'm going to be like your male medical assistant today. Is it okay if I'm in the room? Most of the time, they were like, yeah, sure, sounds good. And then sometimes they're like, no. So that would be taking away a body from the job, essentially. So after about 6 to 8 months, I was like, I can't find a job in a hospital. I'm just not happy what I'm doing. I don't want to tell my parents, like, hey, like, I spent all this money to go to a different college after I dropped out of one, and I don't like this job either, so I'm going to go back to bartending or something. So I was like, I want to do something drastic that's going to take me out of this life, essentially, and just let me start over. So instead of picking up everything I own and moving to a different state or a different location and starting from scratch, poor, you know, doing what I got to do to make a buck, I was like, the Navy sounds kind of cool. So I did some research because my grandfather was in the Navy. I had some friends that while I was in college, I was in a fraternity, and some of them ended up going to the military. So I hit them up and I was like, hey, like, what's the deal with the Navy? Like, is it that bad? And like, what's the military like? And they were like, dude, it's fine. As long as you can show up in the right place, right time and right uniform, you'll be all right. And I was like, I don't know what that means. I learned later on what that means.
Yeah, I'm
sure
you did.
Yeah. But I was like, all right, cool. So, how do I sign up? So I walked into the recruiter's office and I was like, I want to be in the Navy. And he was like, got him. And I was like, yep, what do I do? And he was like, so did you go to college? And I was like, yeah, I went and I have my associate's degree. He was like, he was hyping it up. You know, oh, you're going to get all this stuff. Nope. The only thing I got was E3 right out of it. So I was like, oh, that's not that bad. But he tried to sell me to be like a CS. And for those of you who don't know, it's a culinary specialist, which is a cook, right? Because he was a CS. And I was like, well, what the hell is that? And he was like, you're going to be a cook, and you're going to be on the ships, and you're going to be making, you're going to learn how to do all. And I was like, stop right there. It's like, I do not want to be on a ship. And he was like, yo, you're in the Navy recruiting office. And I was like, yeah, I get that. But when there's a will, there's a way, right?
Yeah.
So how can I be in the Navy? Because I ain't going next door. The Marines are doing pull-ups and they don't take lunch, and I'm not about that life. Like,
crayons.
I like my... Yeah. There's a trail of Crayola. I don't know, whatever. So I was like, what can I do to be in the Navy but not be on a boat? And he was like, what about a submarine? And I was like...
That's even worse.
I was like, you're losing me. You're really losing me. And he was like, what about, like, construction? And I was like, that's what I'm talking about. I was like, my grandfather was telling me about something that he wanted to do that he never got the opportunity to do, which is like a CB or something. And he was like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I was like, all right, well, what do they do? And he was like, they don't go on ships. They're more greenside military. And they'll, you know, go overseas and they build stuff. He was like, I don't really know what they do because they're in the Navy, but they're completely separated. And I was like, why didn't you open with that? Like, hello, that's what I'm looking for. So long story short, I ended up going to MEPS. I took my ASVAB, came in with a full college degree, and I got a 38. And I was like, is that good? And they were like, no.
You need a 10 yeah. now. So
Yeah. Okay. They were like, passing a 35. I was like, so I passed. I aced it. This is great. So I was like, all right, well, like, now what? And they were like, well, here's your list of jobs. And I was like, well, what are they? And he was like, he was going through all of them. And I was like, all right, I don't know what you're saying. Which ones are the CB rates? And he was like, there's this one. And I was like, what is this one? He was like, equipment operator. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And he was like, you know, you drive forklifts and cranes and all. I was like, next. And he was like, UT. And I was like, what's that? He was like, it's a plumber. And I was like, plumber? Huh. All right, sign me up. And yeah, that's kind of how I transition from being a go-around colleger, frat kid, to, you know, where I am today. Currently still active duty. Been in the Navy about 7 years, going on 8 here soon. It's honestly been a roller coaster, but it's been a hell of a roller coaster. It's been fun. It's been fun. I don't think anybody's ever been on a roller coaster and been mad about it. You know what I mean?
I don't know. There's some sketchy roller coasters out there, so you never know.
That's true. That's true.
So there's a few things in your story that I want to highlight. The first one, hilarious, that these recruiters like try to get everyone to be in there, right? Because I was an AT, my recruiter was also an AT. So and he was like, "Oh, you're gonna love it." I never want to do that job again. It was an interesting experience, but CSs, by the way, I don't know a whole lot about the CS rate still, but I mean, I know you can like go work in the White House and be like an executive chef, like there's opportunity, but I'm pretty sure most of them are just like, aren't they just like canned food on like, I don't know. I don't know.
I do know that there was CSs that like they, so it's like a, you know, like to do like the cooking shows on TV and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know how to compare it really other than, so they take a certain amount of like CSs that like want to like, you know, excel and like they are good at what they do and they're able to like get outside that like canned food mindset and like go and like cook for like the president and like all these other judges, the
executive chefs and stuff. And I think there was one Navy CS who was on a cooking show, like I don't know if it was Gordon Ramsay or something, but I remember hearing
I love those shows back.
I think so I mean, opportunity for sure. Let me not knock a rate that I know nothing about. But
We can knock it.
I remember there was this one time on Facebook, this poor kid was trying to go into the CS rate and he was so excited about it. He was like, "I'm going to be the best chef." And he was just getting roasted online. I'm like, listen, guys, people in the military can be very mean on the internet sometimes. Be nice to each other.
You never know. Maybe that one kid knows how to cook rice.
And
they'll stop messing it up, you know?
Right. I know, right? Rice, of all things. Yeah, they do. They do mess it up. So I want to talk a little bit about the nursing thing, which I know is before your military career, but it's interesting because we don't hear a lot about male stigmas in careers. We always hear about like, oh, females are underrepresented in careers and females aren't getting paid enough. And so it's an interesting conversation that I want to talk a little bit more about. I did nursing school for a quarter. Well, I did the pre-nursing and then I did a quarter. And there was there's a few males in my cohort. And I think there's two in my entire cohort of like 40 people. And so like a very, very small margin of males anyway. And I remember one of the males that was my partner in one of my classes, like for him, it was just very weird for him. Like, you know, when we were just doing like basic stuff, like head to toe exam practice. And for him, it was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I should like be touching like your hand or touching, you know, like your stomach. And the instructors had to be like, no, like you're a nurse. Like it's not weird. It's your job. It's what you do. Even when you're going through the schooling, did you feel like there was a stigma surrounding it? Or did you feel like that really hit you heavy when you started trying to actually find jobs?
So I wouldn't say through schooling, just given my personality and just the way I was, like, cause I had the same classmates throughout the entire program.
Yeah.
So from like day one, you know, I was the guy who walked in with my scrubs and like these bright pink polka dot socks. And they were like, oh, God, with a mohawk. And they were like, who the hell is this kid?
He's going to
Right off the bat, you know, I was one of those kids that I was always loud. I was always talking with people. I was always helping people. And when it came to doing like labs and clinicals and stuff like that, I kind of put that aside and I was more professional. But I was just like, hey, like, my name's Vinny. I'm going to be your male nurse today. Like, is it okay if I exam? You know what I mean? Like, there was ways to go around it.
Right.
For me, it was easy to come out and say it. That's why podcasting is kind of, like, up my niche, especially video podcasting, because I have no problem being in front of a camera or just being loud or belligerent. But for some people,
that's just an East Coast thing. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? We're loud and we're outgoing, but don't hold the door for me because I can do it myself. I don't need your help.
Yeah. That's why I can't spend more than like 2 days in New York. Too much.
You go, you get a dollar slice, and then you leave.
Yep.
Yeah, but anyway, to get back to your point, or your question at that. No, that during schooling, no, there wasn't really the stigma. They kind of let us know. They were like, hey, like, look around, right? Like, there's 80 females in here, and there's 6 males. So, no, like, this is what you're getting yourself into, but it's how you apply yourself and what you can do on your resume. Which, yes, I did my best. You know, I was on the dean's list. I had every certification that you were able to get. I walked out the door with. But when you got to the real world, it was completely different.
Yeah, right. I think that's the experience with most careers, honestly. Mm-hmm. School's never what it's like in the real world. So why, other than the boat thing, and maybe this was it, why did you not decide to go corpsman or decide to go like an officer, medical, like medical rate, I guess officer, I don't know if they're called rates, but why didn't you decide to go on the medical side of the Navy?
Going back to the recruiter's office, I was actually what they call too qualified to become a corpsman, because since I had a degree, which I kind of get where they got it from. It's like, since I had a degree in the medical field, they were like, hey, what we teach you, we want you to know from scratch, right? And what you know is probably a little bit more advanced than what, you know, we're going to teach you. So
really?
Yeah. So also, that doesn't my ASVAB sense. Score probably was a little too low for that.
I don't know. That's it. Because I've met some corpsmen that because I used to always ask, like, every time I'd go into medical, I would be like, I would ask them, like, did you want this job? Or was this a job that a recruiter threw at you? Of course, they all were like, of course I wanted the job. And did I believe every single one of them? No, I did not believe every single one of them. But I just feel like in the medical field, personal opinion, that people should be qualified, if not overqualified, want their job.
I went to school for it. Obviously, I wanted to do it. And if I can do it in the military, it would have been great.
Right.
You know what, though? Everything happens for a reason. I'm so glad I'm out of that field, because where I am now and the people I work with and the people I've met, this community that I'm in is so tight
that
it's like, you know, in big Navy, you see so many different people and they come and go and you'll probably never see them again. Unless, you know, they're in your raid or, I don't know, whatever the case may be. Right. But in the CB community itself, there's very little duty stations and there's very little of us. So everywhere we go, we see people. Like, for example, my two instructors in my A school, in my tech school, were my first class and my chief at my last duty station. Like, it's such a small community that what goes around comes around. So
it kind of... I love that.
Yeah, it kind of helps you, like, be nice to people and, like, learn your place, you know? It's like...
Yeah,
you never know when you're going to meet these people again.
When we had talked on your podcast, one thing that really stood out to me, and we chatted about it a little bit, was your leadership style, which to me it's kind of an anomaly, and to hear in the Navy that people have solid leadership skills. And I know it sounds weird. I mean, to people listening and that aren't super familiar with the military, it might sound weird to think that in the military, there's bad leadership styles, but the Navy's ranking system usually creates an environment where there are people feel like I'm your leader because I am an E6 or I'm an E7 or I'm an E8 and you're going to listen to me because of my rank. And it sounds like the CB community might be different. And I don't know if it's your entire community, if it's because you're tight knit or if it's just you. I don't know. So talk to me more about like what leadership and what that culture looks like within the CB community.
So I would say the leadership, like, but for the most part, like at the duty stations I've been in, like, granted, right, like the bigger duty stations, the more people, the more experience and the more time for, let's just say, bad days people have, right? And I don't want you to classify, for anyone listening who's maybe still active duty, that maybe someone's bad day doesn't make them a bad person, right? If you're having a bad day, doesn't mean you're a bad person, correct? So our leadership, like, as much as people might say, oh, he's just talking out of his ass or he's being a kiss ass, that's completely a lie. Because the leadership I've had in my communities have done nothing but gone to bat for me and stood up for me. And if I have any question, they'll get me the answer, they'll get me the cliff note, they'll get me the instruction, they'll do anything they can to help us out. Because they know that, like, hey, one day this person is going to be in my position, hopefully, right, retention. But if he is in my position, I want to be able to show him that this is the type of leader he's supposed to be, right? Don't think just because I'm a chief or I'm a senior chief or I'm a master chief, I don't have the time of day for you, because that is completely the opposite of what I've experienced in my entire career. You can walk into any of my past master chief's office and be like, hey, how much is the price of an orange in Africa? And I'll be like, I don't know, sit down, let's look it up. You know what I mean? Like, that's the type of leadership I've had over my 7-year career.
That's awesome. And that's the reason I asked, because you're still active duties. Obviously, if I got the vibe that you're going to say, yeah, my leadership is trash, yeah. We're not going to go there and put you in a position. But no, that's really cool. And it kind of presents an interesting perspective, because for probably leading up to the point that we've had conversations, my whole theory was, oh, the leadership in the Navy is the way it is because of the ranking system. But CBs rank up the same way everyone else does in the community. Mm-hmm. Or in the Navy. What do you think it is that is so different about this community? And my thought process is that it is such a small, tight-knit community, but I would love to hear from your perspective. What is it that you think creates that environment?
It's a really good question. It's kind of a tough question, too. I think just the fact that, the CBs don't get stationed on every single Navy base out there, or every single, you know, military base out there. We kind of stick to like our own bases, and our bases consist of our community, right? So to take with that as you would, I don't know. It's a really good question.
And it might be harder for you because you haven't seen the other side of it. So there's really not a whole lot to compare to. Do you guys come across a lot of poor mental health or mental health issues within your community, or yes. I mean, let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, definitely. From my experience, 2023, see you later, because that was just, you know, it was just it is hard with the amount of time when you're at like a battalion, is what they call it. That's like every CB will do a battalion, which is their shore duty. And yeah, you're home. I'm sorry, it's not a shore duty. It's a sea duty. So yeah, you're home, because like, you know, when we get deployed, we don't go on a ship. But we do get deployed and sent overseas somewhere. And maybe where you are, like, the service isn't that great. Maybe you're not making that much money. Who knows what's going on with, you know, Jody back home. And then we have like our field exercises where it's just like, it's a constant, like, uphill battle, a constant uphill battle rhythm, right? So eventually that can get very tiring for people. Because you got to think, our job is vertical construction, right? That is tiring. It's hot. It's cold. It's raining. It's every day. It's kind of the same thing. Mental health in that aspect, it becomes very, 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 very repetitive, right? And I can't speak for everybody else, but when you're away from your family and you're doing something the same every day for 6 months and you don't have that good communication with people back home, you miss your child's birth, you miss a holiday, you miss a first birthday, very comparable to what, you know, the other side of the Navy would be like when you're on a ship, right? I think very similar. We are in that aspect. I don't think the CBs would have any like different, you know, mental health issues other than anybody else. I mean, we get to stay in nice hotels, so that's kind of cool when we get deployed.
So what would you say? I mean, and this is a statistical thing, obviously, so you're not going to know the full answer to this, but is suicide an issue within the CB community that you know about, or is it more mental health issues related to what you just described? And obviously just speaking for your experience, but is this something that you're noticing within the community? Or would you say from a general consensus that people are pretty, I don't know if happy is the right word, but well equipped to handle their job and the stresses that come with being in the military and life on top of that?
Yeah, no, definitely the stressors are there no matter what your job is, no matter what your age is, no matter where you're stationed, the stressors are always there. maybe in our community, it's a little easier to handle it because we're so tight-knit and our commands are a lot smaller than any other Navy. Like, for example, like, I think, let's just say, for numbers speaking, our biggest command is like 750 people. That's like a quarter of like what a carrier would be, right? So it might be a little easier for us, but I really do think that the mental health and the suicide aspect of things, doesn't matter what your rank is, doesn't matter what your rate is, doesn't matter where you're stationed. I think it's evident in any of the U.S. militaries.
Yeah. And I ask that because I think that when people look at the big picture of the military, they might just take like one piece of that picture and be like, oh, well, this is the problem. Oh, this is the problem. We just fix this and that fixes it. But yeah. It's interesting because the command that I was in before I got out was also a small community. I mean, we were like the only, I was EP3s. We only had one command that worked on EP3s. Yeah. And I watched the culture change from more of a tight-knit to more of a toxic environment. And so I truly believe that, you know, the people in the command are what make the command, or the people in a community are what make a community great. And that's not even just the military. That's anywhere you go. You know, they say one bad apple can ruin a bunch, but, you know, I think that one good apple and one good person can spread that same energy to an entire group of people. So I think it works both ways. I don't know that the mental health thing realistically is as black and white as saying like, oh yeah, we just need this and we just need that. But it's very interesting to hear that the CB community is what feels to me like an anomaly within the military. It might not be an anomaly. So I remember what I've heard about what you guys do, and this might be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, is you get to do like humanitarian work and like building things in other countries. Is that?
Yep.
What are the rewarding parts of your career, I guess, is what my question is.
This is the bigger aspect of it, besides just the leadership and the kind of command, you know, I will say, just to give a little BZ to the commands, they do try their hardest to not push people away with like all of their Mando fun. You know, they do what they can to like, you know, bring everybody together, invite the families, invite the kids. So I will say that, and there's a lot of resources out there for military spouses. And I actually did an episode with a military spouse, and since the day of birth, her father was enlisted. So she was bouncing around her entire life, got married to an enlisted, and lo and behold, the pros, I wouldn't say pros, the highlights of me and what I've done for my job is I've been to the Philippines twice and Okinawa, Japan three times. In the Philippines, I actually got to build, the first time I went there, I went for about 2 months, and I was sent there with U.S. Marines, Filipino CBs, and Filipino Marines. And we actually had the Japanese, I think it was the Army. I don't know. I think it was the Army, just because they're the cami colors. We actually had the Japanese military come out there as well, and we all built a two-room classroom and, like, a little medical facility for, like, the locals out there, which was miserable building it. Because it was an exercise, right? So for us, an exercise, like, it was very compact, is what I mean to say. It was like, you know, every day, 10, 12-hour days. But, you know, that's what you expect. You know, you have to get things done. And when there's so many of you guys, it just, one day you look at the ground and it's just a solid piece of dirt with mud piles and it's raining. And you're like, oh, like, we have to build this. But then the last day, when you have your little ribbon cutting ceremony and the entire community floods to you and all the little kids are running through the classrooms and like, I guess their mayor of like their town would be there and all the locals, that's probably the best, most rewarding part, is just to see, you know, the whole community come together and just how grateful they are for what we did. And I'm like, damn, like, we built that. Like, that's cool. That's a good feeling.
That's cool. That's awesome. And so I can't remember if we had talked about this before. Are you planning on doing 20 years in the military?
Negative.
No? When are you getting out?
I think December of 2025.
Okay. So are you going to continue construction, or are you thinking something completely different with your life?
So I'm getting older. Every time I bend down, my knees crack, and I'm only 30. So don't hate on me, because there's someone out there probably listening like, yeah, it only gets worse. And believe me, I know it does. So I'm going to plan ahead for that. So before I get out, for anyone that doesn't know, if you're still active duty, you can look into this as well. And if you're a veteran now and you didn't look into it, haha, sorry, someone should have told you. But there's something called the Skill Bridge Program, which it's kind of like, let's just say, a work release where the Navy will say, hey, like, you're still in the Navy 3 to 6 months prior to you getting out when your contract ends. We're going to let you apply for a company to do an internship with them. This way, when you get out of the military and you're transitioning, it'll be a lot easier, because hopefully that job will hire you. Like, if you do good, like, they'll most likely hire you. That's, I don't know the number, but I'm just going to throw out 99% higher rate, right, when you finally finish your military service. So you still stay in the military. Uncle Sam still pays you. They pay you nothing. But you get to pick wherever you want to do the Skill Bridge program. So, for example, if I'm stationed in Texas and I'm from New York, right, and I want to go back to New York, I can do SkillBridge in New York, and then just when I'm ready to check out, I'll go back to Texas on the military's dime and check out, do all my stuff, and then I'll go back to New York and I'll have that job there. I would love to do that for plumbing. I like plumbing. I think it's so fun, and there is such a need for it. I see, you know, how, like, Siri listens to you all the time whenever you talk. And I see all these videos popping up now and all these ads, just like, plumbers are slowly on the decline. And it's one of those jobs that's so expensive because everybody needs to flush their toilet. Yeah. Everybody needs heat and everybody needs air conditioning. Yeah. So I'll try to do a skill bridge that'll lead me into plumbing. But my ultimate goal is to get set up and be the next Joe Rogan. No, I'm completely joking.
Hey, listen, listen.
No.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know. But now this is like, doing this is kind of like a, you know, a little startup. But what I would really love to do is to take everything I'm learning right now from this business aspect of doing the podcast and relations and marketing and, you know, just all that stuff that I've never done before and incorporate it into being a home inspector. My entire military career, I've been building buildings. I'm tired of that. I want to let somebody else build them and I'll come in and inspect them. And I want people to, you know, feel comfortable with having, you know, a military veteran who did construction his entire career to come to your potential new home and tell you, hey, like, your house is good to go. There's minor discrepancies, but other than that, like, you're good. They also make really good money, too.
And be real about it, too, because let's be real. Some of these inspectors out here.
And yeah, and to know, like, they make so much money. And my wife has a great job. She kind of, I kind of lived through her eyes with my career, because she's actually a nurse. She was an ICU nurse, a critical care nurse. Now she works in the ER. My goal when I was going through nursing school was to work in the NICU, you know, like delivering babies and, you know, taking care of whatever I had to, you know, whatever I needed to do. So since I got out of that field and she's, like, in that field now, I get to, like, live life through her. And then
the Navy's not that bad.
Yeah, I know. I think she working through COVID and stuff as a nurse too.
Yep.
Oh wow.
Yep. We
hats off to her.
Yeah, we didn't know each other at the time. It was like It was like soon after COVID, because I was one of those COVID deployment babies where as soon as we were about to come home, they were like, something's going on and you guys got to stay where you are. And I was like, oh no. And yeah, so she was going through COVID and she was like kind of new to nursing at the time. So she was having her, you know, brink of mental health. And I was in isolation going crazy. And yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit too, because this came up a bit on your podcast and I was also in a position during COVID where I was active duty and I got extended. Because they were like, sorry, guys, like that. No one's flying planes right now globally. Yeah. So it was very much an unknown time period. And I don't think I've talked about this a whole lot on my show. But yeah, I mean, during COVID, when the world shut down, for those of us who were active duty military, we did not know when we were coming home. And thankfully for me, I just went from, I think we were supposed to come home. We left in January. We were supposed to come home in May. I think we came home like maybe like the tail end of June, July, maybe. So it wasn't like so much longer than the original time period. But you had said that you got extended for quite some time. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. So we deployed whenever the day was, I don't know, add 6 months to, well, minus 6 months from, you know, March, April of 2020. And, you know, we were like just finishing, we just finished one of our schools because we were in the Philippines at the time, just finished one of the schools. We were doing renovations on 14 like classrooms of like a new school. Well, we weren't actually building them from the ground up. We were just like, you know, new roofs, new plumbing, new electrical. And we actually got like most of it done up until COVID hit. And I was like, well, I finished my plumbing, so I'm good. I don't know about you guys. But they were like, yeah, there's this thing. It's the coronavirus, and no one knows what the hell's going on. So we're just going to hang tight. And I was like, oh, all right. Yeah, sounds good. Sure. We're going home in 2 weeks. I don't give a shit. Yeah, it didn't work out. They ended up, we ended up going back to like, you know, like our main battalion and kind of like regrouping with them. And that 6 month, 6 month deployment turned into a 10 month deployment real quick. And some people were out there for 11 months. I think I was out there for 11. I'm not going to give myself any credit by saying 11, but I think so. And there was some people who are actually out there for 12, given, you know, they got there first to do turnover for deployment. And then they did turnover again on the back end. So shout out to those guys, man. Those are the real heroes of that COVID deployment.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine the people that were on boats for like 11 months and not pulling into port during COVID. I was like, man, like at least I have my cell phone. Like at a minimum, I had
grass. I had a Starbucks. Yeah. I had like a little mini store. Yeah. We had rules, but like our command was like pretty like lenient with us, where they were like, we know what's going on. Just here's your set of rules that like, you know, we have to follow them and we'll all be good. And I was like, oh, okay. And we got like one day on, one day off, you know, 6 feet social distancing. And
And you were Philippines, you said, in the Philippines during this time?
Yeah, but then I went back to Japan.
Okay, so how was Japan as a country during COVID? Because I know Bahrain, I mean, Bahrain's a kingdom. So the way that they function compared to the U.S., I mean, the king makes the rules, and like, you don't follow the rules, you just get arrested. That's literally how it was during COVID. Like, you will follow the 6 foot social distancing and the masking and whatever rules they had. And if you don't, we're either going to fine you or haul you off to jail. And so a lot of people just avoided going out in general. But how is the environment in Japan?
Yeah, that's literally exactly what we did. We just didn't go out. Yeah. We went to like the bigger base, which was the Air Force base, to get like, you know, like actual shopping or groceries if we wanted to go get some. Yeah. But going out in town wasn't really a thing because everything was kind of shut down. Everything was on lockdown. And I don't even think, don't quote me on this, I don't even think there was a case of COVID in Okinawa, Japan.
Really?
So I think they did a really good job of like, hey, like keep that shit out of here. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think they did a pretty good job. And also like, I can't speak for, you know, everyone else that was there, but for me and my command, like, we were like, dude, I just want to go home. I don't give a shit about going to the bar. Like, and we also had, like, our own bar on base.
Yeah.
We had our store that, you know, sold, like, essentials and toiletries that you would need every day. A little, like, diner. So, like, we had everything we need. We also had a gym. So that kept people, like, you know, active and fit. And we also had, like, a big housing area behind us. Yeah. So it was nice to, like, you know, like go on like a long walk and see people that are like not in the military and not work with you every day. Be like, oh shit, like this, I don't know you. That's nice, you know?
So you guys didn't stay at the Air Force base?
No.
Okay. No?
No, we had our Camp Shields is what it's called.
Okay. We stayed at the Air Force base when we were there.
Listen,
the hotel rooms still weren't all that great. Okay.
Really?
They put the lower enlisted, they put us in like the crappier ones, and then they put the officers in like the fancy ones. I remember time I had to go over to like the officers hotel area because I had to grab something, and I got a chance to see one of the hotel rooms, and I'm like, oh, you have like a queen size bed. and like a whole like kitchenette area. It was like a studio apartment. And I was like, wow, we had like a common area ovens that did not work. I tried making eggs one day and my egg did not cook because it did not work. So I had to.
You should have just got a lighter.
Yeah, I just got a skillet. And then I just ended up eating like burritos most of the time that I was there.
Can you imagine you go to Japan and they're like, oh, do you have any sushi? Nah, I had burritos.
Yeah, yeah, literally. I would get sushi occasionally from the, it's not called an X there, but whatever it's called on an Air Force base. I would get that occasionally, but I intentionally, we're going kind of off topic here. When I was in Okinawa, I intentionally didn't get my license because I wanted to force myself to walk. And so, which worked because if I wanted food, I had to walk to go get it. Yeah. I still drove occasionally, but that other side of the road driving is different. So,
And we weren't allowed to have like, because we were only there for like a short amount of time. We weren't stationed there.
Yeah.
So we weren't allowed to get our licenses or like, you know, get a car or rent a car or anything. Yeah.
It was just like a test. It was so sketchy. It was like, we didn't even study, prepare. We walked in a room and they're like, all right, guys, here you go. We're taking the test for the license. And I'm like, what? And so everyone failed naturally. And then they're like, oh, take it again. And they're like, we'll help you. And so anytime anyone asked a question, they'd be like, hey, what's the answer to question 5? And they'd basically just give them the answer.
Yeah.
So that everyone could get their license.
I can't really tell you, but...
It's not A, B, or C. Yeah, that's basically how it went. I'm like, wow, you have these people driving out. Like, they drove off base. These people are driving on, like, the main roads. I'm like, that sounds really, really sketchy. But, that's, I guess,
I had no clue. Well, good thing they didn't give us licenses.
Yeah. Super sketchy.
Even worse, though, I'm driving a Humvee down those roads.
Oh, and yeah.
A Humvee is the width of those roads. So it's definitely sketchy at some points.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's fine.
It made it work.
It's fine.
I'm from New York. I got this.
Yeah, I know. People drive crazy there. What was I going to ask you next? There was some direction I was going in my brain.
My favorite color is red.
So as far as morale, like keeping people's morale up, would you say that morale was pretty high, low during that time period when like things were just kind of up in the air? Or what would you say the overall environment was like when you were kind of living in the unknown?
At first, morale, not even a word in the dictionary. As time progressed and people got, because we're all human, right? So we adapt, improvise, and overcome. So as time progressed, people got to get themselves into a routine, right? Where it's like, all right, chow is at this time. I'm off that day. So I'll go to the gym. I'll go to chow. I'll go for a walk. I'll go play some video games and then just rinse and repeat. So at first, everyone was like, what do you mean I can't go outside? You know what I mean? Like, this is bullshit. And then people are like, all right, I get it. There's a bigger picture here. And I'm glad I'm not the guy with the leaf on his collar because I don't got to deal with that shit. So whatever he says, I'm just kind of do that because I don't want to piss anybody off or, you know, just make things worse because he's human too. You know what I mean? Like, he's got issues. He's got problems. So it kind of came where people were just like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to fucking do what I got to do. If you need me, call me, type ordeal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say? I mean, I think you kind of hit on this already, but what would you say that it was that kept the morale together rather than falling apart?
The people. The people I was stationed with. The people I was, you know, every day we would have like our little routine, like, hey, man, like, I just missed, you know, I missed my wife. That's cool. I just missed my son's first birthday. Well, that sucks. Yeah. All right. What else? You know what I mean? And then you kind of just, like, things could be worse, you know? And we would always tell ourselves, like, I bet there's someone on a ship that is going through the same shit we're going through right now, but they don't have an Xbox, and they don't have their own room, and they don't have their own bathroom, so it could be worse, right? Like, yeah, we all want to go home, but things could be worse. So we're just going to be grateful for what we got, and we'll play some Call of Duty tonight. How about that?
I love that. Yeah, some of us were living in boxes in Bahrain and had to watch. There's always someone that has it way, way, way worse, honestly.
Exactly.
And I love that you hit so hard on the people aspect, because I think that realistically, when we talk about all these different things in mental health. Like, that's the key to it. It's just the people. So how do we cultivate people in the military so that they are supportive of one another and they're there for each other? And some people would say that that can't be learned. I think it can. Honestly, I think that we just don't, a lot of people don't know what they don't know.
Put them in a foxhole for 16 hours, they'll become friends.
Yeah, right. Well, because when you talk to, I don't know how many like older veterans you've talked to, but like when you talk about foxhole, like you talk to the Vietnam veterans and you talk about leadership styles and like what it looked like back then. And the principle, like the leadership principles themselves, they really don't change over the years. Like they're the same. It's like, what's that turning point? And I'm constantly trying to figure it out in my head. Like, what is so different that like suicide numbers are so high and mental health is so low, and we keep trying to figure it out, and people really don't know, and they keep trying to throw things at it. But I think when you hit the nail on the head when you just say like, it's the people, like just good quality people who want to help each other out, who want to embrace the suck together and not complain, but like, how can we lift each other up? And so I'm so glad that we talked about that and that you brought that up. I do want to give you a chance to let the people know about your podcast. So take a few seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, tell people about your podcast, and then also tell them where they can find you and support you on the podcast.
Not all good. Rachel, thank you so much. The Fighting for Freedom podcast, I spell fighting F-I-G-H-T apostrophe N because I thought ING was probably taken. So,
it doesn't sound as cool. So.
That's true. It doesn't sound as cool.
Yeah.
But I started this podcast on September 11th of 2023. It's a big day for me, right? Being from New York, knock on wood. I had no family members that were, killed during 9/11, but some of them were injured and still dealing with the effects to it now. So very important day for me. It's why I released my first episode that day. I kind of started this whole podcast because I wanted to hear the story of every other Joe Schmo in the Navy, right? And give them a chance to be able to tell their story. And just because you're not like, this big guy who did all this crazy stuff doesn't mean you don't have, mental health issues, or you didn't battle alcohol addiction, or maybe even the good side of it. Maybe you're the average guy who, did really good in investments and in stocks, and or you're really good in whatever you're really good at, whatever your niche is. I want you to be able to come on my platform as an active duty or a military veteran and tell your story, and hopefully you can help somebody else. So that's kind of how I got into this. I was just like, also, I'm curious, right? Like, I want to use my VA loan in the future, or I'm going to file for, VA benefits, or I'm going to do, well, how the hell do I do that? So having other people come on my platform, and I'm like, oh, so it's like a genuine conversation of like, so what website did you go? You know what I mean? Yeah. I kind of like to break it down dummy style for us.
Awesome.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and then all the social medias besides Twitter, because I just never got into tweeting or tweeting, whatever it's called. But yeah, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Threads. Hit us up.
All the things. Love it. I think it's called X now. So Xing.
X, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I recently started playing around with it just to kind of see. I don't know. Yeah. I still can't really get into it.
Nah, but I feel the same about Threads. Yeah. I had to download Twitter for like an act. When I was in college, I was in an acting class and I had to download Twitter. And I was like, why am I downloading this? And he was like, it's part of your homework. And we had to like write like a monologue. And I was like, this is so fucking dumb. I was like, weird. I mean, I still have that Twitter. So you don't go on there.
It's like MySpace. I think my MySpace is still floating around out there somewhere. I don't know. Don't check it out.
I wonder what your song was.
I don't even know anymore. What a time to be alive, I swear. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on this show today. First video podcast, so I think it went pretty well for what it was.
Yeah, of course.
For anyone that is checking out the video, if your video is not for you, you can definitely head over to Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, any favorite podcasting platform and check out this podcast episode on there as well. Please make sure that you also check out Vinny's podcast, the Fighting for Freedom podcast. Make sure that you also go leave a 5-star rating and review on his podcast. That does really, really help us podcasters. And share it with your network, because you just never know who you know that needs to hear a message on there, especially those active duty who need to hear a resource or information that they might not get from their command. And so thank you again, Vinny. The last question, is there any last words or a piece of advice that you want to leave the listeners with today?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I just wanted to let everybody know that I am active duty military. I do run the Fighting for Freedom podcast. It is not DOD endorsed in any way, shape, or form. My views are my views only. They do not represent the Department of Defense in any way, shape, or form. I'm just a man with a microphone and a camera. I would love for people to take full advantage, if you're currently still in the military, of your TSP, which is your Thrift Savings Plan. It's going to help set you up in your future. I do a lot of videos on these. It gets annoying after a while for viewers, but I don't care, because I care about you and your future. That's why people like me and Rachel are here. We don't do this for our health. We do it for... Actually, yeah, we do it for our health. We do it for our mental health.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today, with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.